Good morning. We're doing the Navi Yeshayahu. We're up to what they call the 48th chapter. And if the microphone here is disturbing you, let me know. We can lower it. The Navi had spoken to the Jewish people. He had spoken to the northern 10 tribes. The Navi had described that they use Hashem's name when they swear falsely. And the Navi had turned to the people and told them, take note of the northern 10 tribes that have been exiled. And part of what we're supposed to learn from that, says the Navi in Pasuk Gimel, Harishonot me'azigati, I foretold the first downfall of the Assyrian Empire, the fall of Sanherib, who led the Assyrian troops to Jerusalem and had a miraculous plague that wiped out his army. Umipi yatzeu ve'ashmiyem. I declared it in advance. I let you all know it was coming. Pitom asiti vatavona. And when it came to Sanherib, my decree came out in an instant and it came to fruition. So the Navi says with Sanherib, it was a flash, the night of Pesach, and boom, his troops are falling dead. There's a plague that hits his army. Midati ki kashe ahatam. The Navi says, I know how difficult you are, you people of Israel. Balzel opecha umitzchacha nishucha. Your neck is stiff as metal. When we say someone is stiff-necked, that means they're stubborn. So Hashem says it's as though your neck is made of metal. You're not willing to shift your head once you've decided you're going this path. It's very hard to convince you differently. Umitzchacha nechusha. And your forehead is nechusha. The nechusha could mean like copper, as though a person is charging forward and nothing's going to stop them. So that's the idea when a person has shame, or when a person is willing to doubt themselves, so their posture, their body language is, their head shifts a little bit down. The more down a person is internally, the more their body is going to go down. The more brazen a person is, the more they stand upright. And so when we want to describe in Tanakh, when a brazen person is described, so often a brazen person is described as mitzchacha nechusha. Their forehead is like copper. They're picking up their head. They're not embarrassed. They're going to do what they want or what they believe. And so the Navi says, Hashem is telling the Jewish people, I know how hard it is to convince you. You're such tough people. And that's why I made this plague before it happened, I told you. And when it happened, it also happened miraculously. In an instant, suddenly, there was this plague that hit his troops. Because I knew how hard it is to convince you, I let you know in advance, this is what was coming. Because otherwise, the Jewish people were suspect of saying it was their pagan gods that did it. Remember, people were trying to worship all kinds of things. So they might say, you know, maybe it was the Assyrian pagan god who was upset at them, that hit them that night. So Hashem says, "Vagid lecha me'az b'terem tavo ishmaticha." I told you long before it happened. I warned you. I told you this was coming. Lest you say, the Jewish people, that it is otzbi. Otzbi is the Navi's slang for an idol. Why is an idol called atzabehim? We say it in Hallel. Atzav comes from the word etzev, sadness. So the Navi calls an idol the source of sadness. Otzbi, a person might say, my idol made this miracle. And the Navi calls the idol Otzbi, my source of sadness, because an idol is a source of sadness in that people believe in it, people invest in it, people have hopes, and then they end up being disappointed. So that's why the Navi calls the idol Otzbi, my source of sorrow. So the Navi says, Hashem foretold the downfall of Sancheiriv, lest people say it was their idol that did it. A person might say it was the idol that I chiseled out. Pisli, from the word pesel, to chisel out. Niski, the idol that I made of molten lead, from the word nisach, pour. So the molten lead idol, you might say, did these miracles. So that's why Hashem says, no, I'm not leaving you room to question where this came from. I'm telling you in advance it's coming. Shamata chazekula. The prophets told you, and now watch, says the Navi, how it unfolds before you. Vatim halot agidu. And I want you now to admit, won't you say that what I foretold actually happened? Hishmati chachadashot meyata. And now when I'm going to tell you new things, I want you to believe them just as well. So the Navi's saying, I built up my credit by you. I told you about the downfall of Sancheiriv, and when you saw that came true, so now I want you to believe me when I tell you that the Babylonian Empire will also crumble. Now remember the importance of the message. The Jewish people believed Hashem was on their side, and that they were invincible. And with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the Jewish people were not quick to say, oh no, it's our fault, it's because of our behavior, the prophets foretold us. On the contrary, we find in the Navi Yechezkel that the Jewish people said, if this happened, maybe it's all over. Maybe we're not responsible for adhering to the Torah. So the Navi tells them, no, I'm telling you, just like the downfall of Sancheiriv came, so too the downfall of Babylon will come. And even though at the moment it will be hard, hard to believe that this will actually happen, well, take my credit from what happened with Sancheiriv and believe me about what's yet to come with the Babylonian Empire. And this is very important to encourage the people not to give up. Remember, people were sold into slavery. People were taken out into Babylon naked like animals. People were not so hopeful. So the Navi is telling them now, a century in advance, he's telling them, it's going to come. Babylon will crumble. And just remember how I foretold you about Sancheiriv, and that came too. Unsurot velo yidatam. I told you things that were hidden, no one knew them. But I told you, so believe me, says the Navi. Ata nivre'u velo meyaz. When Hashem says things, then they became created. Hashem's telling you things that you couldn't have foretold because they weren't yet on the horizon. Hashem says, I foretold it, so I created this reality. I tell it to you before it happens and no one else has forecasted it. And that's why the Navi says, I'm so careful to tell you things in advance because I know how tough the Jewish people are. I know how difficult you are. And I'm scared that you'll say, oh, I knew that. You didn't tell me anything new. So that's why the Navi says, no. I'm telling it to you before anyone forecasts it. I'm telling you a century in advance, Babylon's going to come and take you down. And I'm telling you 2 centuries in advance, or a century and a half in advance, that Babylon will crumble and you're going to come back. And don't tell me later on, yeah, I knew that. No, you didn't. No one said it. I'm telling it to you, and now it was created. The decree in heaven just happened. Gam lo shamata, gam lo yadata. The Navi says, you didn't hear it from anyone else, and you didn't see it, and you didn't know it. Me'az lo fitecha oznecha. And I know, says the Navi, that even though I tell you in advance what's coming, you're not listening. You're not willing to hear me. And I know that you remove my warnings from your heart. Gam lo shamata, you're not willing to listen. Gam lo yadata, you're not willing to know. Gam me'az lo fitecha oznecha. And this isn't a new thing with the Jewish people, says the Navi. It's been a long time that you refuse to listen. Ki yadati magod tivgod. Because I know that you repeatedly are a traitor, Hashem says to the Jewish people. I know that you're a traitor to me, to the prophet. And from the time you were born, you are called Poshea, a wanton sinner. You are willfully going against me, Hashem says. And it's been this way since your inception as a nation. Leman shemi arich api. And here the Navi tells us the recurring theme, which is really the source of so much of our hope. The Navi says, Hashem does things for you for the sake of His name. There are so many times that the Navi tells us this theme, and we say it in Shmoneh Esrei. Leman shemo. Hashem does things for the sake of His name. He promises and He says, you don't deserve it. You haven't kept your end of it. But I'm going to do it because my name is connected to your name. And why should my name be desecrated just because of your misbehavior? Right? You go with your kid, you're at a wedding, and the kid misbehaves and he does all kinds of things. So you should take him to task. But why should you put yourself down and do that right now? Right now you want to enjoy the wedding. So you say, okay, I'm going to let him get away with it now and we'll see if I have to deal with it tomorrow or not. Maybe I could turn a blind eye, maybe not. Why should I let him ruin the wedding for me? Hashem says, for the sake of my name, I'm not going to let my name be desecrated. So that's why I'm going to have patience with you. Leman shemi arich api utilati echtom lach. Hashem says, and for the sake of my glory, I'm going to Echtom lach. I'm going to extend my anger. The word echtom, I don't think it shows up anywhere else in Tanakh. Over here, the word echtom comes from the word chotem. Chotem is the nose. So, echtom lach could mean I will, so to speak, close up my nostrils. I'll close up my nose. If the flaring nostrils is a sign of anger, so then closing the nostrils is a sign of holding in one's angers. So that's one definition over here of echtom lach. And Ibn Ezra points out that there is no other place in Tanakh that this word shows up, echtom. And Ibn Ezra gives the definition, which is what to me sounds more logical, but what do I know? Because the first definition I gave was Rashi's. And the second definition is going to be the Ibn Ezra's, but I want to explain what's going on here grammatically. I joke with my kids sometimes, and I say, can you please pajamatize yourself? What does the word pajamatize mean? You take a noun and you turn it into a verb. So there are games, which is really poetic form, which you can take a noun and turn it into a verb. Take the noun, pajama, and say, pajamatize. Now you've made the noun into a verb. Make it more active, right? What's another good example of that? Bokatov. What's another good example of that?
Computerize.
So this form, it's interesting that the researchers claim that this form was developed by Rabbi Eliezer HaKaliri. That's what the researchers of language, they argue that Rabbi Eliezer HaKaliri, who compiled much of our liturgy, much of our songs, our ballads, our songs in Slichot, Ashkenazim have well over 50% of their songs from him. Sfaradim a little bit less. But the slichot and the kinot that we say on Tisha B'Av, the prolonged lamentations we say all morning, so that's composed by Rabbi Eliezer HaKaliri. And the researchers argue that this was one of his great inventions, that he took nouns and made them into verbs. And I think you find it in Tanakh. I don't think you have to go that far down to Rabbi Eliezer HaKaliri, a thousand a millennium before him, and this is an example of that. Here you have the word chotem, which means nose, and the Navi took it and made it into a verb. Echetom lach. I will make myself into a nose for you. What does that mean? So it means when you take, just like let me think of another example of that. What's another example of that? If you would tell your wife, can you please jewelify yourself? So you mean, put on a lot of jewelry, right? So, jewelify yourself. There are examples of that in Tanakh and also in Shas. But what it usually means is not only to take the noun and make it active, but it means to strengthen the noun, to take that noun and make it very active. Over here, echotom nach would mean if extending one's nose, harich af. That's the term in Tanakh for having patience. If anger is reflected by flaring nostrils, so then prolonging one's anger is called leharich af, to prolong one's nostrils, to prolong one's patience. So then, echotom nach is, so to speak, to take the noun of the nose, which represents anger, and make it very, very active, very focused. Echetom nach. I will become a patient set of nostrils for you. So it sounds funny to us, because we're not used to using that term as reflecting anger. But if you think of verses throughout Torah already, you see that this is the term for anger. Af Hashem, the anger of Hashem is called Hashem's nose, because the reflection of extreme anger is when people's nostrils flare. So anger is very often called af. And when we say Hashem is patient, we say erech apayim. Hashem extends his anger. But that goes back to the same term. So over here, when the word echetom nach, so first of all, it's important from a research perspective, just to see that it's not Rabbi Eliezer HaKaliri who invented this. Here you see it. The noun became a verb. Technically, so that's the question here. Does it mean I'll seal my nose, I won't allow it to anger Hashem, saying, or I'll extend my anger? Levilti hachritecha, so as not to annihilate you, says Hashem. Your behavior doesn't warrant it. But Hashem says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And that's the concept we see throughout Tanakh, that there's this promise that the people as a whole are going to last. Not necessarily because we deserve it, but rather, like the pasuk says, "Leman Shemi," for the sake of my name. So why do we in Shmona Esrei mention it? In Shmona Esrei, we add a word. We say "Leman Shemo Be'ahava." Hashem does it for the sake of His name with love. That's a much higher level. That's what we're talking about in Tefillah. So we're up to pasuk Yud. Okay, so the Navi's been talking to the people and saying, I foretold the downfall of Sanherib. I'm foretelling the downfall of Babylon. I know how stubborn you are. You don't really deserve it. And I'm going to have patience with you for the sake of my name. From the beginning of our relationship, from your inception as a Jewish people, you've been rebellious. You've been traitors, Hashem says. Very harsh rebuke. Remember, we're in the section of Yeshaya, where Yeshaya is foretelling the salvation of the Jewish people. And intermittently, he mentions, by the way, you guys don't deserve it. You're going to get it, but you don't deserve it. Yes?
For the sake of my name, I have some trouble with, because it's really for our sake. To be the representative of making a godly world, that Hashem's reflected in this world. You know, if Hashem had chosen, you know, that it's not going to be on Israel, it's going to be something else, He can make His name great just as easily, you know, by doing all kinds of miracles for anyone else who would be totally forgotten. I mean, it happens with individuals, sadly, when they leave Am Yisrael. They're descendants of their name. They're finished, but Hashem is still great. I mean, the fact is, we know, we believe that Hashem chose us and doesn't change his mind. That's wonderful, but the rest of the world could easily, you know, Hashem could do anything. He could, you know, make sure that any group reflected how powerful and wonderful he is. I think it's for us, out of love for us, that he lets us do it. His name, I don't really understand that.
Can we take 10 minutes to answer his question? Because I think there's a very important concept in that. Yes, let's just take a vote, because it might be at the expense of our other learning. Shall we take 10 minutes? How many people are for that? No, I'll, if we choose to go into it, I'll repeat the question. Gentlemen, do we want to take 10 minutes to go into it? Because if not, we'll relegate it to Thursday night. How many people want to go into it?
Sure.
The rest of you are no, or the rest of you are... how many people don't want to go into it? Okay, so go into it. The question was asked, how can we say this is for the sake of Hashem's name? There are two points, really, in the question being asked. Number one is the idea that Hashem could do anything and he could just take another chosen people. And number two is the idea of how much we benefit from the fact that Hashem says, I'm sticking with you. They're really two disjointed questions. So we'll deal with them separately.
But if you do it for our benefit, then it's not necessarily for his name.
Right.
It doesn't have to.
So I want to start with the second one, just because once we deal with the first one, the second one will seem irrelevant, and the second one is important. Let's take the example of a parent who's at a wedding and the child is misbehaving, and the parent says, I'm not going to deal with it now. I want to enjoy the wedding. We'll see tomorrow morning if I have to deal with it. What?
But God?
Wait. A mashal doesn't prove anything. It helps us understand. It doesn't prove. I'm not coming to prove. The idea, now the child will say, when the next morning he doesn't pay anything for it, the next morning he's sweet and behaving, and the parent decides, okay, he was a little bit rowdy at the wedding last night, I don't have to deal with it. So the child will say, I won. Dad did it for me. What's the real answer? Dad did it for himself. But there is a derivative where the child benefits. There's no question here that when Hashem does it for the sake of his name, we benefit. What Hashem is saying, though, is that's not why I did it. I didn't do it so that you guys will benefit. Appreciate that. It's not out of my love for you. It's not because you deserve it. It's not because I want to be good for you. It reached a point where none of those warranted Hashem's patience.
I just didn't want to be about my joy at the wedding brought that. That's what you're saying.
Hashem said, I'm doing it for the sake of my name. Now we have to understand what that concept means. But it's a very big blow to us. Hashem saying, you guys have been misbehaving so badly from the day of your inception as a nation that you don't deserve it for any of those reasons. And that's the concept of the Man Shemo. The fact that we benefit, certainly we benefit. Hashem's point is, that's not why I'm doing it. And that's a very, you know, that's sad. It doesn't say that here.
Okay.
There are other instances where it says that. Here it doesn't say that. So here it's a very, very demeaning and difficult message for us. What does that mean, Hashem does things for the sake of his name? So, I'll take us back to my first grade experience. Okay? I was in first grade, and the Rebbe told us about the flood. And then the Rebbe told us that Hashem put a rainbow and said, I promise I will never again bring a flood to the world. And then Noah felt comfortable having more children. He said it's worth it to invest and rebuild this world because it won't all be annihilated. So little Nathanael Frankenthal raises his hand and says, I don't understand. Who ensures that Hashem keeps his promise? Hashem could make everyone forget the promise. Hashem could go back in time and undo the promise. What does that mean that Hashem promises, so now Noah is comfortable? Why are you so comfortable? What's to ensure it's going to happen? There's nothing binding Hashem to any agreement. So the first grade Rebbe wasn't so happy with me. But after many years, I realized that that's one of the themes that Hashem keeps telling us. When Hashem says, for the sake of my name, or because I am truth. Part of what Hashem is saying is, of course I can get away with it. I can make everyone forget I ever said it. I can go back in time and undo what I said. There's no stopping Hashem from changing everything from the way we know it. And yet, Hashem, when He makes promises, when He tells us His signature is truth, when Hashem says terms like this for the sake of my reputation, so what Hashem is saying is, I'm not going to do that. But He could? Yeah, of course He could. Could He choose another people? Every promise Hashem makes, Hashem can undo. If Hashem can go back in time, so then you can undo everything. Hashem could banish the world. There's nothing limiting Hashem in the sense of because Hashem said so or because Hashem promised. The only thing is that promise that Hashem tells us, I am truth and I stand for what I said. So you're asking a question about Hashem's promise for the sake of my name, and you're saying, but Hashem had other solutions. Sure, Hashem always has other solutions.
Even with keeping His name, He says to Moshe, let me get rid of these people, and, you know, I'll make another one through you. Yeah, it's the same DNA. Say it's the same on Israel, but boy, everybody else is out, and only He is in.
That's a different question. Now you're asking a third question.
No, I'm sorry. I don't want to say that, you know, Hashem and untruth is like an oxymoron.
Because Hashem told us it's an oxymoron. It's not because we have any proof of it. We have no way of knowing.
That's true.
I'm saying that's the basic concept of everything we work with in Tanakh.
Yeah, you're right. You said so.
Right. That's the only way we know it. Otherwise, we have no way of knowing.
Okay.
I'm saying that there's Hashem. He can do everything. So I'm going back to my question as a first grader, and I'm saying, yeah, that's true. You have no way of knowing, but you're going to work with what Hashem says about Himself. I have no way of knowing what Hashem is, but when Hashem tells me what He is, and then Hashem shows me some of His attributes, so then I have what to work with. But the only reason I have what to work with is because of that declaration, that Hashem says, I am truth. Now, that's concept number one. If we wanted to work it out philosophically, then there's a rational way to reach the same conclusion. But that's maybe for a class on Jewish philosophy, Jewish thought, not our class in Navi. Okay.